The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday the 9th of August 2019. On the podcast today, Nick Tulloch, Finance Director of Highlands Natural Resources, HNR, ticker there, and Nick talks about Zoetic, its CBD subsidiary, which has commenced sales in the UK via its website today. Also on the podcast, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, XTR, provides an update on their Eureka copper gold project in Zambia. Also on the podcast, Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals, EUZ, and Lawrence explains the significance of why they've initiated a formal stakeholder engagement process at their Toral zinc lead silver project in Spain. And John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about Blue Rock Diamonds, that's BRD, and Arc Minerals, ARCM. Plus, as always, I'll have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see a wealth of other content, from podcasts to videos to blog articles. Check it out, voxmarkets.co.uk.
Tired of using different sites to research companies? Vox Markets aggregates key financial details, pricing data, and company news into one place. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nick Tulloch, Finance Director of Highlands Natural Resources. HNR's ticker there. Nick, thanks for joining me.
Morning, Justin. It's a pleasure.
Yes, we speak again. And you've announced today that the website has launched. In fact, I'll leave that teaser right there before we get into that. As always, Nick, let's just give people a summary as to what Highlands Natural Resources is about, please.
Yes, of course. Well, Highlands is best known as being an oil and gas company. We've been listed on the standard list in London for just over 4 years. Most of our projects over that period have been in the oil and gas and natural resources space. But I think what has really caught everyone's excitement this year is our move into hemp and the establishment of our new subsidiary, Zoetic, which, as you alluded to a moment ago, is now selling CBD products on both sides of the Atlantic.
Yeah. Well, before we go further, how did that come about? How did the pivot towards, or the addition of hemp sales, how did that happen?
Well, I know it sounds a bit odd for an oil and gas company to get involved in hemp, but one of our projects is a nitrogen well in Kansas mm-hmm. that produces a very pure form of nitrogen that also contains traces of hydrogen. And if you happen to do chemistry at school, you'll probably remember that the combination of those two elements produces a very powerful organic fertilizer for plants. Now, we tested that actually on cannabis over in Colorado, and the results were just sensational, a 30% increase in the size and the yield of the plant. And so that took us into the hemp business. Rather than sell the fertilizer or the fertilizer gas as a commodity, we use it ourselves in our own business. And we have a 33,000 square foot indoor facility, which is where we use the gas.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvelous stuff. Okay. Well, let's get into the news today, which is the commencement of UK sales. Now, you have been selling in the US already, haven't you?
We've been selling in the US since the end of June this year. Right at the tail end of June, we started sales. US sales are to convenience stores and also through a third-party specialist CBD retailer. Mm. But here in the UK, we have our own UK website, which is zoetic.uk.com. Now, that has been functional for most of this week. We've been testing it with some initial orders, just making sure it's all operating as it should be. And we announced this morning that it has now formally launched. So we're now selling in the UK, and actually have been for the last few days, four different flavors of CBD oil, which are natural, peppermint, blood orange, and melon. And each come in two strengths, a 500 milligram and a 1,000 milligram.
All right. And so, do you know what? All of a sudden, I'm starting to feel hungry. I don't know why you mentioned those things.
But
so you got those flavors there. Are there any sort of standout popular ones at the moment? What's the most popular there?
Well, you know, it's very, very early to tell. We've only been getting orders for the last few days, but there is one. Blood orange is very much out in front in terms of the popularity of orders. Mm. But I think, you know, the range is important, and it was always important to us to give people a good selection of different flavors and different products. And Taking CBD, I think, is very personal. I mean, I know for myself, I would probably choose a different flavor according to the time of day. So I think if I was taking CBD at night, I'd probably prefer the natural flavor. Mm. But actually, during the day, I have to say melon is my favorite. But we've asked a number of people to test it, and everyone's got their own views.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what's next? We've launched now. I'm looking now. It's a nice, slick website, zoetic.uk.com. And you've got this a range of four so far. What's next on the website? Anything else coming?
Well, we also announced this morning that for the month of August, we'd be offering a new launch discount. So for those people who'd like to sign up and join our mailing list, we're offering a 20% discount of our products just for August. But going forward, our next big event is that we'll be attending the Hemp and CBD Expo in Birmingham at the NEC in the middle of September. And that's on the 14th and 15th. And that'll be a good opportunity to showcase exactly what we've got. I'd also say that the website's still being worked on. We're looking to build in a bit more information about CBD and what it can do. We're going to start up our own blog. I think a lot of people know that we've now set up an office in Perth in Scotland. Two new people have joined me. We're building up our social media campaign. We actually have our own UK Instagram page up and running as well. But most importantly, what we're focused on at the moment is establishing other sales outlets. I mean, step one for us was always about positioning the brand in the UK. But step two, where it really matters, is getting that product into other establishments, both online and also into shop shelves.
Okay. And going back to the US, how's it looking at progress over there? What's going on there? Is it going well?
Absolutely. I mean, the US is a much bigger business than the UK side. I mean, we've literally just been starting over the last few days. So that they are somewhere ahead of us in terms of store sales and third-party sales. And that's what they've led with. I mean, we're leading with the website here to build the brand. They started out in the stores. So they are Zoa Chill products. We have a second brand, Chill, is available in 36 convenience stores in the US. And that number has been growing steadily since we launched at the end of June. And then both Chill and Zoetic are available in Leafy Quick, which is a specialist US CBD retailer. And what's interesting about them is that in the Chicago area, you can order it and receive it same day, rather like Amazon do here. And then the other aspect about the US, which is probably bigger still, is we have a seed genetics program, which is run in our indoor growing facility that I mentioned earlier. And we also have 16 acres planted outdoors. So the seeds will be harvested throughout the year, but are likely to be sold towards the end of our financial year, so the first quarter of next year. And then the harvest, well, weather dependent, will be at the tail end of the autumn this year.
Wow. Okay. Marvellous stuff. Well, Nick, as always, three things left to do here. If someone's liking the sound of this but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I think the three things are the CBD industry is growing at an enormous rate. So over in the US, for example, there is a prediction that it will hit $23 billion of sales in 4 years' time. Here in the UK, it's a little bit smaller, but already, according to the Times, there are 6 million people in the UK using or who have used CBD. What we have with Zoetic is we have a brand that is now for sale on both sides of the Atlantic, both online and offline in the different countries. But we also have a vertically integrated company. So I mentioned the seeds and the outdoor harvest strategy as well. And then the third reason is I'm always so excited about the CBD side. I tend to talk very little about the oil and gas side. I never want people to forget that we have a number of oil and gas projects. We have 8 producing wells east of Denver. That produces a very meaningful cash flow for the company every month. And then we have a number of other longer-term projects, which any one of which could produce a very meaningful valuation uplift for Highlands.
Marvellous stuff. Nick, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. XTR is ticker there. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. Thanks very much.
Now, you've done updates on the Eureka project there in Zambia, and we'll dig into this. As always, though, Colin, there's always people who are new tuning into the podcast, and so they may not be familiar with Extract. So can you just summarise what Extract's all about, please?
Well, Extract's now a diversified company. It operates in Mozambique, and it operates in Zambia. Got an alluvial producing project in Mozambique, developing a hard rock project in Mozambique, exploration ground, two projects in central Zambia, and developing processing operation at Kalengwa, which is currently under due diligence for final option. Well, you know, we've got a 90-day option there. So essentially balanced between copper and gold. Two countries, two set of politics, and two currencies. So diversified in Southern Africa, where, as you probably know, I've got a, I like working.
Yes, well, Zambia, you've had some success before. In fact, people may not know about this, but I mean, just summarise previously the excellent deal you did here in Zambia.
Well, you know, with the Kiwara project, known as Kalambila in those days, Anglo-American had been there 10 years and found nothing. And within 19 months, we turned it from zero into 265 million. And we discovered what is now the Sentinel mine owned by First Quantum. And is one of the better, bigger mines, operating mines in the world. And a showpiece for Zambia. So that's one of First Quantum's top mines now. So that discovery was around about 2009 in a company called Kiwara. So I've got a personal like for the way things are done in Zambia. You know what you're getting. The code is transparent, and the various ministries are very supportive of groups who are active, proactive, and get on with the requirements of the license. So great place to work, and I've had some success there. And the formative part of my career, I worked on the Zambian Copper Belt as a, you know, in operations.
Yeah. So you must be confident of finding something there, even though, you know, others haven't. So what? Why do you think? I mean, you know, like I said, you've got track record and confidence, but what do you think? What makes you think you'll find something this time?
That's a good question. Always a good question. You know, when I first got involved in Kalambila and would go around raising the money, fund managers quite rightly would say to me, oh, Anglo's been there some 10 years and found nothing, you're going to find it. That's a tall order. And of course, one had to get over that little companies, little resource companies work different to the majors. But then this is not the same case, really, that, you know, if you look at the main copper belt, some of those mines which are still producing started production in 1930. And in 2019, one of the mines has had a project approved which takes them for another 30 years. So when you've got mines with lives of 100, 150 years, there's not a strong incentive to go out looking for and testing alternative concepts. And those concepts, in my opinion, the stuff we're looking at now, is possibly bigger than the main copper belt. Zambia is very, very rich in copper, and I think there's a lot more copper to be found, and I'm pursuing this IOCG model because I passionately believe in it. Academia believes in it, you know, in the 60s and 70s, quite a lot of papers on the resemblance to Olympic Dam. So why haven't anybody found it? I think that, you know, junior mining companies have got a way of diving into the low-hanging fruit. And it's not always that if you get an occurrence which is easily seen and visible on surface, the fire and all below it appears at 60 meters down. That doesn't always happen. So we're going into grassroots approach into what I think is at Kalengwa, at Matrix, and at Eureka, very, very high possibility of finding what we firmly believe is there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. And this release today, take us through the significance of this, if you could, Colin.
Well, the nice thing about Eureka, and Matrix for that matter, but let's talk about Eureka because that was today's announcement, that there was stacks of information, Justin, from here, there and everywhere. RST in particular, RST was one of the big copper belt companies, and Caledonia did some work there as well. And data sets from all over the shop generated over 20 years, a little bit longer than that. Instead of sort of scratching around and going and trying to reinvent the wheel, this time we commissioned a group to actually digitize everything and get everything on the same scale, every scrap of information we've got, get it onto a common database. And that this time has been a success, you know, applying modern computer work, if you like, to old data has really opened our eyes to the potential of this area. And let's say a fluke, because the village has opened a small little operation, which is quite offset from the main pit, and discovered very similar mineralization. We plugged that into the data set, and that appears to, it doesn't complete the picture, but it suggests that we might have up to 3 kilometers of strike, and that, you know, with quite a wide ore, with a quite wide deposit it appears to be, 3 kilometers of that, which extends to a reasonable depth, is very attractive.
Yeah.
And of course, depth does come into the situation. In the old days there, nobody really cared a thing, Justin, about the top oxides, you know. In fact, more nuisance than anything, you had to get them out the way to get at the sulfides.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually class them as waste, I think. Yeah. In this day and age, if you can find large tonnages of oxide close to surface and employ the solvent extraction electrowinning process, you can have a nice little operation. Then follow up with the sulfides. So we're actually on a different mission in a potential IOCG style mineralization type. And all our data now, instead of us having to go back to the field, more geophysics, more geochemistry, more trenching, we've actually generated real drill targets, Justin. So that's the relevance of this news release. I know it doesn't come out strong, but, you know, you might think that trenching and geochemistry and geophysics is cheap. It is. It's the cheapest, you know, a cheaper form of exploration than the drill machine. But the question still remains open. And every time you set a geophysical company on, you're into $50,000 to $70,000. Likewise, a big geochemistry program, $70,000 to $100,000. So all that's been circumvented, and we're off with the drilling machine.
Yeah, well, exactly. And when is that likely to happen? When are you getting that drilling machine out?
Sooner the better. I want to do matrix at the same time. Well, not at the same time. I want to go into, just to keep the cost spread nicely and not too much site establishment, I want to do Kalengwa matrix and Europa kicking off within the next 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Okay, well,
and then, of course, you know, yep, if we do all three, it should be more effective use of money.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, as always, Colin, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of the progress you're making here, but are not yet following the story, give them those 3 quick reasons why we should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Gold production in Mozambique. Exciting exploration potential in Zambia, which is copper gold. And with Kalengwa, the chance of a similar operation to Mozambique, producing similar numbers. So 2 cash-flowing entities with the blue sky exploration, copper gold in Zambia.
Marvellous stuff. Colin, busy there as always, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Very busy, Justin, but I think we're on the right path.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals, EUZ, is ticker there. Lawrence, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. Thanks, Justin.
Now, you've announced a formal stakeholder engagement process has been initiated, and I read that and I thought, what does that mean? That sounds interesting. So I read through, but I would like you to explain it, and I'm sure many people would. So before we get into that, Lawrence, though, for people not familiar with the company, just give us a brief summary. What's Europa Metals all about, please?
Europa Metals is operating in Spain. We're focused on one project, which is a high-grade lead-zinc silver project with a JORC resource and a scoping study. And today we've announced we've begun the process to move forward and tick all the boxes towards a development decision by the regional government, which means allowing us to build it.
So what has to be done? Because when you're going from an exploration company into becoming hopefully a mine, and it's a massive process. There's so many different streams of work that has to be undertaken, and like I said, so many boxes have to be ticked, and most investors will not know the half of it. And this is one that obviously goes under the radar, I suppose. But what are you doing here? What are you actually doing here to move this forward?
So, well, I might just take a step back and sort of address the first point. You know, the two major issues facing the mining community. Well, there's a number of issues, but two of them which have really come to the fore in the last 10 years are stakeholder engagement. So you can't, the days of just going and building a mine in somebody's backyard, you know, without the people in the backyard getting anything or having any say, all the rest of it, have gone. And also, you know, very careful environmental process. And, you know, the wording of the recent Spanish law change is quite interesting in terms of the appropriateness of a mine for area. So there's some parts of the world where, quite rightly, it's not appropriate to build a mine. For instance, if there's no water or not enough water hardly to even be used by local people. So what this is about, actually, why I think we've got an advantage in Spain is there's lots of established structures on judging the appropriateness of a mine. There's a law change earlier in the year which basically divides all mining projects in Castilla and León in energy on the one hand, which is uranium and coal, and all the other metals on the other hand, which is us, lead, zinc, silver, which is positive to us because I think uranium and coal are more problematic. And Castilla y León supporting the development of, if you like, boring old metals projects like lead, zinc, silver. And then there's the second element, which is supply chain transparency, which essentially is all the stuff. I mean, have you seen it, Justin, with MAC being attacked, for instance, on their use of speciality metals like cobalt and other companies, because where's the cobalt coming? Is it coming from conflict zones, etc.? And that's something that really interests me personally, and it's one of the things why I think Terral's a good project. So I think it's got a lot more value for the future, because I think, yeah, we're going to have to go through a series of hurdles, which are clearly set out, and as I said, recently been changed under regional law. But by going through those and operating in the EU, we can be very open-handed about how we've done it to bigger investors as time goes by, that we've ticked all the sustainability boxes. And indeed, we've got a stakeholder relationship, and we can say exactly where our product's coming from. And that it's been environmentally and socially delivered in a responsible way. And that's important, I think, as human beings, but I think it's also increasingly important because if you're selling into Western areas, especially, and increasingly the far southeast, you're going to need to demonstrate these things.
Yeah, well, do you know what? And I think investors are becoming, you know, especially the bigger investors, of course, and they have to be, and I applaud them for this, are becoming increasingly aware and of the public sentiment and environment. And like I say, you know, you have to make sure what you're investing is ethically sound, you know. And like I say, in certain parts of Africa, cobalt, where that's coming from, there's questionable practices out there. And so, you know, money is being pulled and people don't want to be seen to be investing there, and rightfully so. So that's why it's always important, isn't it, to have a jurisdiction that's up on all this and is, you know, clearly transparent on these kind of issues.
Absolutely. I mean, just touching on the point that you've just made, Justin, about, you know, what investors want. You know, when I've advised, you know, larger companies in the past, there's been a whole series of things we've done to make ourselves acceptable and fit in with standards for certain investment policy. So there's a few things that we may well progress for Europa as we move forward, because we will be continuing to talk to bigger groups, bigger investment groups as the work on the ground progresses. But we need to be ready. You can't just sit here and say, well, we do what we do and we're a small company and there it is. We need to adapt ourselves in a cost-effective manner to be accessible to larger investors. And again, I think that's what this is about. It is about an exploitation decision. Eventually, it is about formalizing stakeholder engagement with local communities and Department of Environment. But it's also being able to show a comet's trail of transparent, open-handed work about how this mine is actually being brought into production, because that counts for an immense amount. Money is scarce at the moment. People do not want to put development money into projects if they think it's all going to be taken away through licensing, permitting, through political risk issues. And I think that's one of the real advantages that we've got here at Europa. I think we've got the right projects, and I think we've got a good relationship with stakeholders, and we should take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, take us through the project itself. Operationally, how's it going?
It's good. Announced as we've gone through where we are. We obviously had the initial deviation on the first hole. The second hole came in where it was supposed to be. The third hole, we shall update the market once it's complete. We're quite excited to see what comes out of that. But right at this moment in time, we're just waiting. Various of us are getting on planes very soon to go and have a look in the next week or so about how we do. But this is, frankly, a tremendously exciting and slightly nerve-wracking part of the process. It's an important drilling campaign, but right now I'm erring more on the side of excitement. But I want to see what comes out of TOD 23. And, it's the same for all of us. It's going to be pretty exciting, I think.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Lawrence, as always, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
You've got a defined high-grade resource. You've got economics you can extrapolate from. You can go and look at the independent research notes, another one which will be coming out shortly. You're in a politically stable region, and zinc and certain types of zinc concentrate are going to be in high demand.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks very much, Lawrence, and hopefully you catch up in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, no, I very much hope so.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good, thank you.
Now, I want to replicate. Sadly, sometimes when we come on, I don't hit the record button until I say, right, I'm going to record now. But when you first came on, then we talked about the state of the world and the economy. I want to replicate exactly what you said there. Because I said to you, what's happening? So, well, listen, it's at the moment, we have a bit of a big sell-off, haven't we? And so the reasons for this is essentially China and Trump, isn't it? And everything else plays into that, doesn't it?
Well, look, I'm never good at repeating myself, but there are a number of issues going on. Clearly, Trump and the trade war has the potential to cause a lot of trouble in China, certainly slowing Chinese growth because it's harder for the Chinese to export now to the US, 25% tariffs and then another 10% of tariffs imposed by Donald Trump last week. So it's having a major impact on them. The Chinese are working very hard to effectively place those exports elsewhere in the world. They've collapsed their currency to some degree. They've been accused by the US as being currency manipulators, and that they can take that to the World Trade Organization. I'm not sure what they can do exactly as a result, but I think they can apply certain sanctions to China or in some way. So the risk is rising, I think, to the global economy or to growth in global economy. On top of that, you've got the huge problems in Hong Kong with several weeks of rioting now, and the Chinese government ramping up the rhetoric and employing Yakuza type or triad gangs to beat up protesters and things like that, which is an old Communist Party tactic. And so not wanting to get political about this, the risks to the global economy are rising. Europe has probably got more problems with its banking system to run. A hard Brexit, of course, is maybe just a bigger risk for Europe as it is for the UK. And then interest rates. Everybody looks like interest rates are going to lower. And again, that's telling you that policymakers are very concerned about the risks to the economy. In fact, the Bank of Japan has been warned that it shouldn't deepen negative interest rates too much. We've got negative rates in Germany already. It's a bit tricky out there, and it feels a bit as if it reminds us of the summer leading up to the collapse of Lehman Brothers and the crisis that we had there. And we don't see another Lehman Brothers type event, but maybe we're going to see a number of smaller events that are before markets correct back up again.
Yeah, well, so, and on top of that, Spud, you like has gone through, John.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, as if it couldn't get any worse. No, but do you know what? Do you think, I was watching CNBC yesterday, and I know Trump called the Chinese currency manipulators, and then they said, that will lead to, if you call us that, and it leads to severe global financial meltdown, in other words. But then they did shore up the currency a little bit yesterday. So they did respond positively, and then Trump said, no, it's not going to be a protracted trade war. So he's stepping back a bit, because he knows he's a champion of the stock market. He's a businessman. You know, that's his big sell, pretty much. So he doesn't want to trust the stock market, because then what's he going to run on? You know, I mean, that's the whole thing about him, isn't it? So one of them, you know, either they both, you know, rein it in a bit, you know, then stop threatening so much, or one of them will have to capitulate, won't they? And someone on CNBC was saying yesterday that the Chinese, you know, the demonstrations in China, well, it's becoming a real problem now for China, because they don't want, you know, rebellion. It's like it's almost close to becoming Tiananmen Square. It's the last thing they want. So, you know, it's hard to know. Who's going to give? Will they both give a little, or will China have to give? Because it seems like China are, you know, to a certain extent, suffering, aren't they?
Well, the problems with the trade war have the potential to spill over into rioting in other Chinese cities. And this is the big fear for the Chinese government, is that other people will be seeing news on social media platforms of the rioting in Hong Kong, of the move towards more independence in Hong Kong. And they'll be saying, well, we'd like some of that over here. And the political activists, of which there are many in China, may well be stirring up and fomenting more trouble. And of course, President Xi, who's made himself effectively a life president in China, who will have his own opposition, because other people will want to rise through the ranks and challenge that. And so it's always possible that Xi gets toppled if there is more unrest within mainland China, maybe caused and pushed over the top by the impact of the trade war.
Yeah, I mean, it's the last thing they want, really, isn't it? So, it can't keep going. Who's feeling the pain the most? That's the thing, isn't it? And Trump, you know, he does put up a good face, doesn't he? He puts on a good face saying, you know, we're earning... He keeps saying all the time, you know, we're earning loads of money from the Chinese now. You're not, though. You know, you're costing the Americans a lot. That's all. You know, you import a lot of Chinese goods. There's tariffs on those goods are now more expensive. So it's costing the American people money. And if China starts ramping up their sort of tariffs on, you know, American soybeans and all that, the farmers having a bad time of it. So even though he's going to put a face on it, it's not one way. It's not one-way traffic, is it, you know?
That's true. Anyway, I'll tell you who is feeling the pain today. The directors of Sirius Minerals, whose shares have now dropped below 10p.
So what happened there? They're funding bonds, they're bond funding. What happened there? I'm not over the story too much.
Well, they say they were looking for $500 million in terms of high yield. Some people will call these things junk bonds. The market has failed to give them their $500 million of bonds. And so they've pulled that, and the share price has collapsed, because without that that bond issue, the other money being offered to them in the banking line isn't there, and the project can't go ahead. However, having said that, they are spending money at a great rate of knots, because they're already digging the shaft at the Woodsmith mine up in North Yorkshire. But you know, you don't have a jigsaw till you've put the last piece in place.
Yeah, yeah. And this is one that comes up my radar quite a bit. It's too big for me. I'm annoyed at this kind of size market cap. And I know it's been a sort of favourite with private investors for a while, hasn't it, you know? But, because it's risen, I'm going back, wait, it's 2010. In fact, it's going back to 2010 prices now at the moment, or close to. 2015. But it dipped down to this level in 2015. But pretty much it was at this level again in 2012, 2010. So it's not a good story playing out here, really, is it? You know,
unless the market cap is currently £650 million, or thereabouts. But it may well be back into your size territory sometime soon, because it's a major problem. If they can't fund the mine, the work is going to have to stop, and then nothing can go forwards. And sadly, I mean, we've not talked much about this because of the effect of the MiFID II regulations, so it makes it more difficult for us openly and freely.
Yeah, but people not aware of what MiFID II has done. Explain then, John, why has this happened?
Well, there are lots of different aspects to MiFID II, but one of the rules in there, or a series of rules in there, regulate what independent analysts like us are allowed to write about these sorts of companies. And if we're not paid in some way by the company, then we're not allowed to share our valuations and research with the world at large. So we are restricted in what we're able to say. We do make comments within our morning notes, but we're not allowed to add, shall we say, what's called substantive value. So well done to the regulators for, shall we say, restricting the amount of available comment within the marketplace.
It's annoying, isn't it? Regulation there doing the very opposite of what it's supposed to do, you know, just getting in the way. And you think, you've really messed the system up. It was, you know, it didn't need all this, you know, a major change. It maybe needed tinkering, but not major change. And as a result of their, you know, tinkering and input, it's made it worse, hasn't it, really?
Well, I'm sure the regulators have the best of intentions, but there are always unintended consequences to the rules that come in. Yeah. And I think what we're now seeing is that a large number of people have bought shares in Sirius Minerals, but have been effectively denied access to the other side of the story, or the negative argument here, because Sirius are developing a polyhalite, a giant polyhalite mine in the UK. And it's not necessarily a product that that the world is going to pay a great deal of money for. So, you know, there's always two sides to any investment argument, and sometimes there's more than two sides. But it's not right, and it's not proper that investors don't have a chance to see the other side of that.
Yeah, just looking at their cash flow statement for the year ended the 31st of December. They used £170 million in the year of things. That's a big chunk of money to burn through, isn't it? Okay. Any other news, John? Any other companies?
Well, one of our clients, Blue Rock Diamonds, reported yesterday that they signed a 5-year mining contract with Teichmann Group in South Africa. And this is good news, because it actually gives them a substantially cheaper mining contract on a per ton basis from what we can see. And actually, they're doing quite nicely, because they've been discovering bigger and better diamonds at their mine in South Africa. And the mining rate is going up, and the production process plant should be working better now after some modification. So I can see the profits of Blue Rock actually doing quite nicely going forwards. So quite pleased to see progress there. I think that is a tiddler to watch. I mean, the market cap is only 2 million quid, but that means it's actually got some way to go.
Yeah, okay, BRD is the ticker there. That's a good little shot there. Okay, it's just hang on, scroll down. Okay, yeah, marvellous stuff. They've consolidated shares. Are they a while back? Because they're 62 pence, so I assume they were less than that, weren't they, a while back? Okay, marvellous stuff. John, thanks for that. Anything else?
Well, my favourite company, Arc Minerals, okay. Last week they had a conference call with investors. Good news coming out of that about the mineralogy of what they've been drilling into. So we're going to get some more results from them in the next few days, I would hope. So either this week or next week, because the drill rigs are definitely turning down there in Zambia. They'll be drilling through copper and cobalt at this Shazaya East discovery. I'm going to call it a discovery. It certainly looks like there's plenty of copper in there. Good metallurgy. It looks like this Tier Noir type mineralization that we often see in the Congo. So when they hit over 4% copper, as reported the other week, we thought, well, this is looking really good. This isn't quite the scale of the Glencore discovery, sorry, the Ivanhoe discovery further north in the DRC, but anything in Zambia that looks remotely like a Congolese discovery is very good news, and I can see ARC Mineral shares doing very well from here.
Marvellous stuff. Cheers for ARCM sticker there. Thanks, John, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Will do. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They're at five. Block Energy, BLOE, up 4.5% a day. At four, Bidstack, BIDS, up 9.43%. Worth checking out the interview I did with James yesterday. There's a lot in there. And also Justin from PubGuard. There's a lot of stuff going on there. I do feel news flow is coming in the next few months. A lot of it. At three, Lansdowne Oil and Gas. That's LOGP, up 2.44%. At two, Iconic Labs, up 4.17%. Icon is ticker there. It's my people's punt choice. And at number one, Beaufort Capital, BUR, at 7.5% a day. It's been a roller coaster ride there. Excuse the pun, cliche, whatever it is. Cliche, isn't it? Not pun. Top five most liked RNSs. Extract Resources, Eureka Project Update. Of course, calling the podcast today. Amerisa Resources, update on strategic review and formal sale process. At three, Vesarian, China update and clarification. At two, Brave Bison, appointment of non-executive director. And the most liked RNS came from Europe Metals. Of course, Lawrence on the podcast. Formal stakeholder engagement process has been initiated. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.